Hello and welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast, as truthful as resources permit. Jazza, if we'd just left it a little bit longer before recording a podcast, we'd have had a completely Liz Truss Premiership free podcast
for the rest of our lives. I'm so sad, actually, that we don't have that claim, that we were inconsistent with our inconsistency, and should have just been lazy for another couple of weeks, held out just a little bit longer, and we'd have had, I mean, that could have been our new tagline. Never once recorded under a Liz Truss Premiership.
I mean, to be fair, anyone who starts a podcast, you know, next week will also have that claim.
Oh, don't ruin it before the era has even begun.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose technically, you know, we are still recording under Liz Truss's Premiership, so we'd have had to wait beyond this
another
period
couple of weeks
of speculation. And
people have been clamouring for content. It was Taha tweeted us and said, please, I need content. Yeah. And that is a people.
Yes, I suppose so. Yeah, at least one person has asked us to do an emergency podcast, Jazza, for emergencies.
Mm-hmm. I mean, everything is on fire still. This conflagration has gone on far too long.
I suppose, in a sense, for the last 2 years, last 3 years almost, every podcast has been an emergency podcast, in a way.
God, do you remember when we used to talk about, like,
Ed Miliband?
Ed Miliband. Pasty taxes. God, imagine talking about whether or not we should tax hot goods in the same way that we tax cold ones. I crave that dry kind of debate at the moment.
Well, hopefully the pasty wouldn't be too dry, I think. Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, hello everybody. We're the Right Dishonourable podcast. In case you didn't know, and you're already 2 minutes in, Liz Truss is stepping down as Prime Minister after 44 days. She has become the shortest serving Prime Minister in British history, full stop, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a sort of marginal contender, the Earl of something, who was asked to form a government by the monarch of the day and took 2 days to see if anyone would join him and couldn't find enough people.
That's sad. So, and very Liz Truss energy, actually.
It is very Liz Truss energy. That's true. Most people don't count him, though. Uh-huh. To be fair, so I think Liz Truss can probably claim that title.
And yeah, she at least she had a government.
Yeah, she did for a couple of days, couple of hours.
So we're gonna be talking about the fact that Liz Truss done. And then we're gonna talk about this another leadership contest. I'm so exhausted.
The last one was so tedious as well.
Was so long, and this one is like so short, and I'm just like, I don't like it, listener. I do not like it.
We'll talk about the shape of the contest, but I think it's nice from a podcasting point of view that we're not going to have to endlessly discuss different rounds of Tory party voting. You know, it's just going to be in and done by the end of next week, and we'll know who the next Prime Minister is. So,
fingers crossed. All right, we're going to beg you for money, and then we're going to go into the episode. Okay, bye.
If you're a fan of The Right Dishonourable and wish to support the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/rightdishonourable and pledge as little as $1 per episode to keep us going. Mostly this will give you access to a bonus segment after every main release, but you'll also be able to submit topic suggestions for us to cover, and will probably feel commercially obliged to fulfil your request. You also get your name read out during this segment. Thanks to our existing patrons, Eterna Elf, Andrew Kilpatrick, David Preston, Gemma Cumming, Jia Carney, Ilona Domkina, John O, Marlene, Matt, Michael Costa, Nick Webb, Seb Kales, Tahar Khan, and Theo.
Jimmy, when the Daily Star decided to place a fresh lettuce next to a portrait of Mary Elizabeth Truss, to give her full name. It was everybody thought it was very funny. Lololol. Great jokes. Everybody thought it was really good. But I don't think many people actually thought that the lettuce would actually outlast the premiership of Truss.
But it came from an economist quote, didn't it?
It did. Yeah, they said that her government had 7 days or something. Like they thought it would be gone in 7 days, which is about the shelf life of a romaine lettuce.
See, I thought they were talking about the I should have looked this up before. I thought they were talking about the length that her budget had sort of survived before imploding. But yeah, essentially they made some comment about the shelf life of her government that
used a wonderful literary device of a metaphor, and then I think this is probably actually very Daily Star. They made it real.
They did, yeah, and in doing so, I think they've taken ownership of the metaphor, actually. Mm-hmm. They've effectively pinched it from The Economist.
So do you know, if you stitched together all of the episodes of Right Dishonourable, we would also come out at about 7 days.
Is that true? So we've done about 210, this is the 210th episode, and they're about an hour, give or take.
Yeah, 45 minutes an hour, somewhere between there. Yeah, about, I'm happy to say about 7 days, something like that.
7 days, shall I shall I verify this? There might be some.
No, don't ruin it. but don't ruin my world claim that it's based on nothing but a quick Google.
It's about 8.75 days. So yeah, we have we've outlasted the lettuce, I think.
Mm-hmm. What is happening?
I mean, the situation in a sense is quite simple, actually. That the Tory Party's mechanism for choosing a leader, which is actually, it's not so dissimilar from Labour's and the Green Party and I suppose the Lib Dems, is that they've got a system for choosing the leader whereby it goes over to the members, who are generally more extreme in their views than the MPs. You can say this for all the parties, but this is an example that's particularly pertinent to the Tories.
Name an extreme Lib Dem. Actually, to be fair, that's Europe now, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess Europe.
It's all of the people who wore berets in these protests in central London.
But it then means that there's the potential for, you know, I mean, as we saw Jeremy Corbyn, for a leader to be elected who heads up the party who a majority of MPs don't like. And essentially the core of the role of being Prime Minister is that you must command the confidence of the House of Commons, i.e. a majority of MPs support your agenda. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, this essentially it's all about that mechanism. And so Liz Truss got elected by members who liked her. I was actually speaking yesterday to a friend of mine who voted for Liz Truss. In the wild. And she didn't have the backing of enough MPs in her party to actually deliver her program, as it were. Mm-hmm. And I guess
that was because of the economic incompetence. Like, I think in theory it could have worked out, right? Like, I think she had an uphill battle towards the next election, which is happening within the next 2 years or so. But she, actually, I think, would have been able to... She didn't do herself any favours by having not a single person who didn't back her in her government. That's an exaggeration, but it's one of their issues.
It's broadly true, yeah.
Yeah. But technically, she could have gotten by, I think. But it was the economic incompetence of that mini-budget that just completely spooked markets, put her government at loggerheads with the Bank of England, and just panicked everyone, and completely destroyed the amount of Conservative MPs going on the radio, on TV, just lamenting the fact that their reputation as the people who look after your money was just completely flushed down the drain in about, like, what, 2 weeks?
Well, I mean, I guess whatever the length of the of Kwasi Kwarteng's speech was, basically, that, you know.
Sure.
I mean, you're right that she could have having... I mean, she spent the whole summer outlining what she was going to do and her opponent, Rishi Sunak.
There was somebody who was defending her on the Today programme who was like, well, people who were surprised, the markets who was should have paid attention to what she said. And I actually do think there's a point there. She was very clear as to what she was going to do. Don't think people really believed that she would do something that extreme.
On that basis, I suppose people, you know, various markets should have priced in the effect of her agenda as soon as she became prime minister, as soon as she won. But then, you could even go further than that and say it was quite clear once it got down to the final two, that Liz Truss was going to win. That was what everyone was predicting. And so at that point, the markets could have said, well, based on what she said, you know, we now have less confidence in the resilience of the UK economy and therefore the pound than we did previously. So we're going to bet against the pound, basically. So you can say all those things, but yeah, I mean, I guess the what that person said is right, but it, you know, it's kind of quibbling in many ways. But you know, having spent the whole summer saying those things, I suppose in a way, if she'd not done it, then it would have pissed off the members. And this is the whole kind of problem, isn't it?
Who cares? Who cares about the members? Once you're in, it don't matter, does it? The members can't chuck you out. Like she,
that's true.
She forgot. That's true. She forgot who actually. I mean, I think that we have a phenomenon with Liz Truss, and I think that this is a phenomenon that is more wide in society. So let me tell you a little story. I was this morning scrolling through Instagram Reels. Yes, Instagram Reels. and there was a person who was doing like, here's my fit of the day. And was like, yeah, everybody needs these trousers because they really accentuate your proportions. And then it cuts to somebody who's saying, this guy has no idea what the fuck he's talking about. All he's doing is using all of the language that somebody says. He clearly doesn't understand what proportions are. These are proportions, and you can see here that he's just used a buzzword. But the thing is, if you're just watching it and you're not really analysing what he's saying, it looks like somebody who knows a fair amount about fashion talking about how to put together an outfit. And it's only when an expert came in and was like, I have no idea what the fuck he's talking about. And it's kind of like this, I see this with Liz Truss, and I think actually an awful lot of, this is a symptom of like our wider society at the moment, of cosplaying the thing that you want to be and being able to mimic the thing that you want to be enough, but actually having none of the substance beyond the aesthetic or the periphery of what you're presenting. So Liz Truss said, Liz Truss was criticized, is maybe not the right word, but it was commented that Liz Truss is a cheap Margaret Thatcher cosplay.
I think we have made that comment.
And I have definitely said to that. Roll the clips. Because I genuinely think she is. She was, in my eyes, very deliberate about the way that she presented herself in order to be the catnip to the Tory grassroots, who are all basically a Margaret Thatcher circle jerk fanboy club, essentially.
I don't think all of them are, but that's definitely a contingent of the Tory party.
I'm going to say most. And you can disagree if you want, Jimmy Nichols. But I'm going to
the lady is not for disagreeing.
The 1080 is not for disagreeing. But there was this was kind of like a problem with this trust because she didn't have any actual substance behind her to back it up beyond these broad economic ideas of like cut taxes for growth, and growth is only going to be able to be made with the cutting of taxes, which, as I now understand, I'm not an economist, but I've watched many YouTube economists analyze her tax plan.
So not and very explain flattering to, me, to their credentials, calling them YouTube economists.
They are YouTube economists, I'm not going to lie. But making it clear that her tax plan is like an A, it would be thrown out in an A-level paper, like it would in how like basic and how basic the rules were that it broke. She was able to present that to the membership, but then like carried on with the cosplay, because I feel like she didn't have anything else to go with. She wasn't actually able to govern with the rest of the Conservative Party, or have any kind of like intellectual friction or to and fro or push and pull, to be able to debate. She was just there as like a mouthpiece.
She seemed very much broken by events of the past week. Like, she seemed quite a sort of hollow shell when she appeared in public.
At times, shall we talk about the run-up to the resignation? Because she lost her chancellor.
She sacked him.
She sacked her chancellor.
She asked him to come back from a trip to Washington, D.C., I think it was. Mm. And so he flew all the way back. And yeah.
Can you imagine being Kwasi Kwarteng? How embarrassing. His plane became the most tracked plane ever.
I did hear that. I think... I mean, either you spend the whole time just thinking, oh God, I'm going to get sacked, this is going to be really humiliating, and you just, or you're just like, oh, I'm going to get sacked, but I might as well enjoy the flight, you know?
Yeah, enjoy the flight, have a couple of Bloody Marys.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe watch Everything Everywhere All at Once on a small screen, you know?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I wonder what, by all accounts, he's an incredibly arrogant man, although actually, you know, somebody who's intellectually very talented.
Yeah, he does have a PhD, but apparently it's terrible. And nobody can read it.
The thesis, yeah, I've heard, but people have also
I've heard the story about the thesis. So the story about the thesis is that, so you can't access it despite, he went to Cambridge, right?
I think so, yeah.
All doctoral theses generally are, like, you can access them. And you can even, and anybody who submitted one is then accessible to the general public. You can't access his, and you have to actively request that you don't have access to it. And it's apparently because it's so terrible, because he rushed it, his PhD, and tried to finish it within 2 years, and then basically convinced the department to be like, can you maybe push this through and just give me the letters at the end of my name, please. Thank you very much.
I hadn't heard all of that story, but yeah, I'd heard bits of it. But apparently his book on the British Empire is actually very good and quite nuanced. So there's, you know, differing accounts, I suppose, of some of his achievements. But
mm-hmm. Well, he's gone now. Yeah. So then, Liz Truss announced Jeremy Hunt as her new chancellor, which was left of field for me. I did not see that coming.
I think it was left of field for Jeremy Hunt, to be fair.
Yeah, he seemed also... Well, okay, sure. But I thought... I actually thought that this would save her. I thought that Jeremy Hunt being brought in essentially as a technocrat to run things, and Liz Truss to be like the husk of a prime minister, just kind of floating there for a little bit.
I mean, she essentially appointed him as prime minister. I know she actually appointed him as chancellor,
yeah.
But in terms of directing the government's program, he was in charge. So, you know, I mean, you could argue actually that Jeremy Hunt is the shortest lived prime minister, in effect.
Oh, very good. Very good. Yeah. Cutting commentary. But I thought that that would save her because Jeremy Hunt is generally seen as being from the One Nation's more centre part of the party. Somehow he has a brand as being like a competent minister because he has a lot of experience. But as we know, as anybody who's tried to call their GP in the past, oh, I don't know, 10 years, and him being the longest running health secretary that we've had in the modern era, I think, something like that.
Possibly.
That's his fault. He fucked that up. And so the idea that he is quote unquote competent and able to run things is somewhat bemusing to me, but apparently he's got a calculator and can add things up.
I think a lot of claims of competence going back to previous ministers are basically hinged on length of tenure, as you said. So it's the idea that somebody has been
knows
around
how
for
the
a
system
while.
Works.
Yeah,
but you could, I mean, Liz Truss has also, well, she was in the government for the past 12 years in some way, shape, or form.
She's had a lot of ministerial experience. Yeah, mm-hmm. So it's not worked out,
and that didn't go very well, did it?
Yeah, I mean, I thought. I suppose, you know, people were looking at Jeremy Hunt as, you know, as everyone knew, he'd effectively become prime minister. And the sense was almost immediately that this wasn't going to be a sustainable arrangement, that it, not even really that it had bought her any time, I don't think. I mean, maybe it had in a sense of slightly moving the news agenda along.
I do think it moved. I do think it did buy her time. I think there wouldn't have been nearly as much time there. Jeremy Hunt decided to do basically it was another mini budget where he undid it. So he rolled back everything that had been announced by Kwasi Kwarteng a couple of weeks previously.
And he also reduced the energy cap arrangement from like 2 years down to it would finish in April.
It was about 6 months, over 6 months, because it couldn't be 6 months because then it would have been identical to the Labour plan and it's got to be slightly different.
I see. The Nicola Sturgeon style of governing.
Exactly. Let's extend it by a week and then we can say it's our own. But then Liz Truss, she fired Suella Braverman. Who was the Home Secretary, if you can't remember? shortest tenure of... No, definitely not. No, definitely.
Well, I mean, there were people in the, you know, appointed for sometimes a matter of hours in Boris Johnson's government towards the end of his leadership, so that's probably complicating things.
Whoever is currently the lady who is the current education secretary, I think, under Liz Truss, she is the shortest serving cabinet minister of all time.
That's Michelle Donnellan, I think.
I think it's her. I think her tenure was like hours because she got appointed as something by Boris Johnson and then resigned like hours later.
Yeah, so she was Secretary of State for Education for 2 days as well. She's now the Culture Secretary.
Yes, that's who I'm thinking.
So, yeah, that's... and there are a couple of instances of that. I think it was James Cleverly Chancellor for a bit. Did I just make that up?
You just made that up. James Cleverly has not been Chancellor.
He's never been Chancellor.
I do not
think
so.
I think I'm thinking of... I mean, these people are not really the same, but I think I'm thinking of Nadeem Zahawi, who was Chancellor very briefly, wasn't
Nadeem
he?
Nadeem Zahawi, yeah. Those are two different people, Jimmy.
James Cleverly also had a relatively brief stint as Education Secretary, so it seems like everyone's getting a go.
Very exciting. Yeah, it's like musical chairs. So Suella Braverman left. She was asked to leave because she breached the ministerial code, which is a novel thing to ask a Conservative cabinet minister to do, because they have seemed to not care about the ministerial code for about the last 4 years.
Yeah, it was a bit left field again.
Mm-hmm. Which also I didn't see coming, but kind of made sense with this power grab that was happening from the centre. Symbolizing with Jeremy Hunt kind of like symbolizing that as being the technocrat.
Yeah, so Suella Braverman had, I mean, she's been a kind of culture warrior for a while.
She's a terrible person.
I don't know that much about her, but she said something about what tofu eating wokarate or something like that. Tofu eating was definitely involved.
Yeah, she called the woke coalition Guardian reading, tofu eating, blah 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 blah. The great thing is though that tofu is a dish best served cold.
I don't think that's true. I mean, tofu is probably best when it's fried, I would say. Some sort of hot sauce.
I was just referencing
revenge. Yeah. No, I got that. Somebody on Twitter did say, you know, big week for vegan diets. Tofu takes out Suella Braverman and lettuce takes out Liz Truss.
100%. So, yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it was good. Really should credit the person who made that joke, but I can't remember who it was.
Somebody else also made my tofu as a dish, best served cold joke, but I can't remember who did it either on Twitter. Thank you, Twitter.
Thank you, Twitter, for providing us with jokes.
but she resigned and then had that scathing letter. I feel like nobody is going to remember this, and this is not going to be part of like the history books, because the government of 2022... is going to be very long already. But that letter, that Suella Braverman, her resignation letter, was so... It was very in her style. Very cutting. Had, like, a lot of sass in it. Was like, I have integrity, and so I resigned, or whatever. Basically implying that Liz Truss should probably resign. And then, like, 2 days later she did, or something? Oh, Grant Shapps became the Home Secretary. And if I've ever seen somebody fail upwards, it's Grant fucking Shapps.
He's an inspiration to us all, I would say.
It's a mediocre white man everywhere.
Yeah, you know, it's good.
Yeah. Thank God, if he can succeed, we all succeed. I guess he's now still Home Secretary.
I suppose he must be.
I suppose he must be, which I'm sure is how he feels. and then Liz Truss had a meeting with Graham Brady, who I keep on calling Tom Brady, but that's a retired sports person in the America.
Yeah, he's a quarterback, isn't he?
Sure.
Is he retired?
Only a quarter?
I feel he he still plays for someone.
Is he retired? I don't get a sports ball. So she met Sir Graham Brady and the chair of the Conservative Party, and then she came outside and actually gave a very chipper speech, I feel.
I actually haven't seen the speech. And
said, oh, well, she went, hello, I'm off. Bye. That was my literal impression. Thank you. Hold for applause.
It's not it's not implausible that she would say something, you know, almost exactly like
so
that.
So this was it was interesting that you were saying that she seemed like a bit of a husk
was the word you used, but yeah, I agree.
So I think, actually, at Prime Minister's Questions, which was only her third ever Prime Minister's Questions. I thought she was actually quite good. Like, she did the Peter Mandelson line of, I'm a fighter, not a quitter, and that got repeated on the news quite a lot. That was very... And I thought that she responded to stuff very well there, actually, considering everything. But then, obviously, that didn't work, because then she had to resign.
It turned out she was a quitter, actually.
She was a quitter, yeah. She wasn't a fighter, was a quitter.
Well, you can be both. They're not mutually exclusive.
And she... And actually, I thought her resignation speech, it was almost in the same vein as David Cameron when he did his resignation speech and then, like, whistled and was quite chipper about it. I thought that Liz Truss was also just seemed relieved, quite happy.
I think that... So the resignation speech of David Cameron was different from the whistling speech, I think. I can't remember why he was giving a speech when he, like, yeah, as you say, famously, like, left the podium, whistled, and just went back in. Oh, no, he went do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that not his resignation?
I think it was a different speech, but I don't think anyone will ever match that level of don't care as David Cameron giving that speech.
He doesn't need to.
100% not bothered.
Yeah. I've just fundamentally changed the UK and put it on a track for stability.
Yeah. I mean, apparently he was actually quite calm even during the night of the referendum. I think this was probably in Tim Shipman's account of you know, what's the name of that book? But, you know, his account of, like, the Tory party during the Brexit referendum. And he was reading as the numbers came in, you know, throughout the night. And there was a point in the night where he realised that he'd lost the referendum, basically. And his advisors just say that he didn't, like, break down or anything. He just said, oh, I've lost the referendum. I'm going to have to resign. But, and that was just very, like, composed and...
But let's be fair, he's got generational wealth and so doesn't need the job.
I think there is definitely an element of that. But I also think it somewhat does say something about his character. Whereas by comparison, when Theresa May saw that she was getting, you know, that she'd flunked the 2017 election, she apparently burst into tears. Mm-hmm.
The country I love! Remember that from her resignation speech? We've seen so many resignation speeches. there was one last thing I wanted to ask you about Liz Truss before we go into the fastest leadership election in the West. Surely
that's the Australian method of selecting prime ministers. Like, you literally go into a room and it's done.
Oh, yeah,
and,
you know, done white in 10 smoke. Minutes. Yeah. Ever since John Major's time, and this was as a gift, I guess, to Margaret Thatcher, prime ministers get a stipend every year of up to £115,000, I believe.
Yeah, this is for public service functions, though.
Yes.
It's not just to spend on themselves.
Yeah, it's not just a wage, which is how it's been framed by a lot of people, but it's more of a... A ceiling of the expenses that they can claim for continuing to have functions in public life. So that's stuff like running an office, having an assistant, and all of those kinds of stuff. It's a bloody well-paid assistant, but, you know, same vibes. What's her name?
Liz Truss. It's going well.
This
podcast.
It's good. Bless her. Liz Truss... has the right to claim that expense, and Keir Starmer is calling for her to not have access to it. What do you think?
I think it's right that people do have access to running a public office once they've left the job of being prime minister. I'm not even really opposed to the severance payment that she's getting, which is 19 grand, the BBC says, and that is actually just a one-off payment.
Who's giving her the severance payment? Who's her boss? Who's handing her that letter?
Oh, well, I guess it's ultimately it's the taxpayer. But
I have never thought of the fucking Prime Minister getting severance pay.
Well, I think there was a controversy with these ministers who came into office at the end of Boris Johnson's time and held the job for like a couple of days. I think this was actually Michelle Donnellan. They're also entitled to some kind of severance payment. I can't remember how much it is. Mm. But, you know, I think she said that she would refuse the money, or if she had to accept it, she'd donate it to charity or back to the, you know, Treasury or something. I think that's reasonable. If you've literally just only been in a job for... 2 days or a couple of hours, then mm-hmm. then yeah, I don't think you should be entitled to those sort of things. But it's still being an ex-prime minister, which is what Liz Truss will be for the rest of her life now. I think there is still a public service role. I think it is still, you know, acceptable that they run public offices, including, you know, staff salaries and travel to events and that sort of thing. I mean, people have said that she's not going to be a great hit on the after dinner circuit giving speeches, which is probably true.
I don't know. I can see her getting like a GB News show or something like that. I genuinely can see that happening.
Maybe she'll start a podcast. Everyone's doing it.
Everyone is doing it, yeah.
I think it's fine, and I just think I mean, I've previously said that I think MPs are paid enough, you know, at 80 grand roughly or whatever it is. So I'm not somebody that generally thinks that they need to be paid more money. But I think when somebody does a very high ranking job like Prime Minister and then they leave, I think it is acceptable for the state to continue to support them. I mean,
yeah, it's the highest job in the land. Like, and I think that, yeah, to me, it makes sense.
I mean, we'll also be
It doesn't make sense in extreme conditions, like having a prime minister who is literally in the job for under 50 days. But I think that it is something that should exist, and that even Liz Truss, even though that's a blip in the system, should be entitled to.
I think, yeah, I mean, you know, whether she takes it or not, I think is down to her. I mean, we'll also be paying for her security, which I also think is right. Because ex-prime ministers are at more risk than your average person. I think it is right that the British state protects them, basically. So, I don't know, it seems like kind of a cheap point to me. And, I mean, in the scheme of things, 115 grand for the UK government is not a lot of money, even on an annual basis. So, I don't know, seems a bit silly.
So, you ready for Johnson 2.0?
I mean, I'm ready for it just for the drama, which, as previously stated, I am still a big fan of, even as the Tories run this country into the ground.
He's on a flight back. We are... we're just here doing commentary on, like, a psychodrama. It's like a soap opera, and people literally can't heat their homes.
I mean, to be fair, you know, I'm...
I noticed you put on a jumper earlier rather
I'm also feeling the effects of that. Not as severely as some people, for sure, but...
Hey, we've got to find our joy somewhere.
I mean,
we?
The fact that you find all this stuff funny, you... in the, you know, general sense, not you personally, Jazza.
Yeah, it's like
the fact that one finds this stuff funny, that doesn't mean it isn't serious at the same time. You can enjoy watching the Tory party implode and still think that they're doing a terrible job of running this country.
Yeah, and that it's gallows humour, in it.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Mm-hmm. That is a disgrace.
Yeah, I mean, that clip is clearly going to be imposed on, you know, on top of her premiership in future documentaries.
100%. So we have three candidates, I guess, to be the next prime minister. Our third in the year, and they would be our fifth in 6 years.
Yep.
So basically what they need, they've slightly changed the rules because Tory party does what Tory party wants.
Well, the 1922 committee does what
the 1922, yeah. The 1922 committee is the honey badger of political organisations. They have decided that each candidate needs to get the backing of 100 members of parliament. There are 380-ish.
It's less than that now, but yeah, it's
300 and something. So basically, it's not possible for there to be more than three candidates who are declared and then supported and go into the actual competition. Guido Fawkes have been tracking public declarations of who Tory MPs are backing here. Rishi Sunak has just passed 100 MPs. Boris Johnson, yes, that old sausage, is currently at around 70 MPs. And Penny Mordaunt is on 25 backers.
So this actually includes not just people who've publicly declared, it includes people who've privately contacted Guido, some of whom hold official positions in the Tory party and therefore can't publicly declare. So yeah. The numbers on Guido's blog are generally higher than the numbers on the BBC at the moment. Yeah.
Interestingly, though, Penny Mordaunt is the only person who has declared that she is running to be the next Prime Minister.
So actually, while we've been recording this, the BBC has said Rishi Sunak is expected to confirm his candidacy soon, according to a source in his campaign. So
okay. There were whispers that him and Boris Johnson would end up coming to some kind of an agreement. All right.
I think those whispers were almost exclusively related to Boris Johnson's camp rather than Rishi Sunak's. Mm-hmm. That was my read of the situation anyway.
Yeah. So, Penny Mordaunt is the only one to have declared her candidacy. Rishi Sunak is...
Is going to. Probably by the time people listen to this, he will have done.
Yeah. Well, that does depend. He could be Prime Minister by the time this actually hits the airwaves, Jimmy, knowing our record. In which case, do you think that Boris Johnson is going to run? He's on a plane, or he was flying back from, I'm sure, some work as a local MP that he was doing in the Caribbean.
Dominican Republic, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Making sure that... What's his constituency? West Ruislip?
It's Uxbridge.
Uxbridge, sorry. Why do I think it's West Ruislip? Making sure that the interests of his Uxbridge constituents are represented well abroad. Well,
maybe a lot of them use tax havens. Who knows?
Probably. Do you think he's going to run?
So there's this quote here from Henry Hill, Deputy Editor of Conservative Home. Boris is still being a bit cautious. He's fundamentally a storyteller. He's acutely aware that this could go horribly wrong for him.
Yeah.
If it comes back and it blows up, or even worse, he loses the bid to Rishi Sunak, that's just a terrible final chapter of his book. I think that's, you know, that puts his dilemma well. So...
I also think, knowing Boris Johnson so personally as I do,
yeah,
I believe that framing.
Yeah, I mean, Boris Johnson was a journalist before he became a politician, uh-huh. And he is. I mean, that's actually one of his political talents. I think is that he understands how stories work and what is compelling and what's not. But by most people seem to think that if he gets 100 backers. More importantly, if he gets 100 backers and then manages to make it onto the ballot paper for the general Tory membership to vote on, he's more popular with them than Rishi Sunak is, and therefore Boris Johnson will become Prime Minister again.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think Johnson will probably hedge his bets until he's confident that he's got the numbers, and then I think he'll decide whether he's going to declare or not. Basically.
I don't think it's going to happen.
You don't think Johnson's going to get 100 backers?
No, I don't think that this is the last. I think that he would want to return, but I don't think now is the time. I think he may look to do it after the next election.
Because that's also the thing, isn't it? Like, it's a terror. I mean, people talked about the premiership being a poison chalice after the Brexit vote, but looking at it now, it's like the situation is actually much, much worse. Like, yeah. Who would want to be Prime Minister right now?
Right. Which is why I'm confused by any of them, wanting to be completely honest. Rishi Sunak, I think, is their best bet electorally. Like, we haven't even talked about some of the polls that came out that had, if there was a general election on X day, like a week ago, the Conservatives would have been the fourth largest party in Parliament.
So behind the Lib Dems and the SNP.
The Lib Dems and the SNP, with Labour with like 500 and something seats, and the Conservatives was 22.
I think we have mentioned that poll before.
Did we? Okay.
Possibly.
And to be fair, the only way is up from there. I feel like 2 years is not enough time for there to be a significant turnaround in optimism about the economy and a change of the Conservative brand that has been so trashed. And I feel like there is still inevitability of the Conservatives losing the next election.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely inevitable they're going to lose the next election. Mm-hmm. I think even Keir Starmer could be embroiled in a horrific scandal, and then the Labour Party get rid of him, and I still think Labour will win the next mm-hmm. election.
Well, because they're not the Tories, and they didn't destroy everyone's lives.
I mean, well, the Tories have alienated even the people who they're supposed to represent, like people who have mortgages, for example. And you know, the fact that people's mortgages are going to be more expensive once they come out of whatever fix they're in, where they've got a fixed interest rate. I mean, you're bound to be furious, really, if you're in that situation. If you are previously a supporter of the Tories, or generally a supporter of the Tories, and this is what they've done to you, you're not going to vote for them, are you? That would just be masochistic, apart from anything else.
To know the British people have done stranger things.
Well, there are some people that hate Labour so much that they would vote for the Tories in any circumstance, basically. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, vote for the party that isn't Labour in any circumstance, and that in some constituencies that the leading party after Labour will be the Tories. Mm-hmm. So it does kind of make sense. I think it is a very strange play for Boris Johnson. I mean, there's a kind of blog post on the Guido Fawkes site, which does point out that there's been so much speculation about him joining the race that in some ways it will be a bit embarrassing if he chooses not to. And I think he seems to be aware that in circumstances like this, you need to kind of strike while the iron's hot, as it were.
Mm-hmm. You don't get many chances to become Prime Minister, although he may get two.
Well, I mean, this would be his third one, actually, because he famously sort of pulled out, you know, stopped his candidacy at the press conference where he was going to announce his candidacy.
I thought evidence showed that Boris Johnson was actually quite bad at pulling out.
not when it comes to, you know, electoral races, seemingly.
Sure, okay.
He seems to be doing okay at that. I could definitely see him not doing so. If he thinks he's guaranteed not to get the nominations, and he needs 100 nominations by, I think it's 2 p.m. on Monday, then I can see him pulling out. If he gets the nominations, he might as well go for it, because I think he'll probably win. Mm-hmm. And he'll get... Well, okay, so this is the interesting thing. Before he was thrown out of office, the kind of next milestone in terms of like the various scandals he's involved in was due to be the Privileges Committee, which was going to rule on whether he should be removed from the House of Commons.
And it's been spoken about a lot as a potential, like the Prime Minister, who's meant to be bringing stability, would then have to go in front of the Privileges Committee and have that as like front page news all the time when you're trying to like steer a sinking ship.
Yes, yeah, that is true. And they're also, I mean, it depends whether you believe these briefings or not, but there's definitely been kind of leaks or whisperings that the Privileges Committee is going to recommend that he's thrown out of. Can they actually enforce that decision, or is it just a recommendation? I don't know. But they're going to say that he should be removed from the House of Commons. And crazily, there's been speculation online that a potential solution to this would be to put him into the House of Lords and make him, you know, the first Prime Minister in decades to govern from the House of Lords rather than the House of Commons, which he can still do, apparently.
Christ.
Which would then also mean that for Prime Minister's questions, the House of Commons would have to assemble in the chamber of the House of Lords, because the House of Lords are not allowed in the Commons. I suppose they could just change that rule. You know, that doesn't have to be an absolute thing.
Oh God. So can I give you my prediction?
You can, yeah.
By the way, Penny Morden also ran. she ain't getting in, I don't think. What I think is gonna happen is, I believe Rishi is going to announce we're gonna see an increase in backers. He'll get over 150 easily, I think.
I think so, yeah.
I think so. Boris Johnson, I don't think he's going to run.
You think he's going to pull out?
Yeah, I don't. Well, he's not in it.
Well, yeah, that's true.
I don't think he's going to go pull in. And I think that some of that is just now it's not the like he will feel now is not the time for me. But also, I have a feeling that the Conservative Party and the 1922 Committee are both so, like, they're here trying to make sure that there is stability and that this is as quick and efficient as possible. And Boris Johnson messes things up and creates instability with, for example, the Privileges Committee. So I think he's going to also be encouraged not to run.
I think that's true. And I mean, also, Privileges Committee aside, and, you know, any unexploded bombs that sit under Boris Johnson's previous time as leader, so many people have publicly stated in a very direct way that they don't think he's fit to be Prime Minister and that they don't want to serve with him and that they can't support his government. I mean, Rishi Sunak is the most high profile of those.
Yeah.
And there's been talk that if he were to become Prime Minister again, there'd be defections. There would definitely be rebellions in the House of Commons on key votes, I think. And as you say, the 1922 committee at this point, you know, as the representative of the Tory parliamentary party, just want there to be stability and want there to be somebody who is at least perceived as serious in the top job.
Yeah.
And I think it would be...
And Boris Johnson might be fun at the party, but you wouldn't want him to drive you home.
Who was it that said that? Was that...
I can't remember.
It wasn't Theresa May, was it?
No, it wasn't.
I'm just randomly attributing. But it was a female Tory politician, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I think. I think it would be insane for the Tory party to put him
Anna Subrick? No.
I think it might have been Anna Soubry, actually. Yeah, yeah. I think you might
Anne
be
Soubry,
right.
Anne Soubry, that's her name.
I think it would just be insane. But they've spent the summer being insane. So do you know what I mean? That's no barrier to.
But I think
them doing it
with that. I don't think Rishi Sunak. I don't think Penny Mordaunt is going to get to the 100, and so it's just going to automatically go straight to Rishi Sunak.
I mean, that would be the hope, I think, from the point. And I suppose if you don't particularly like Rishi Sunak but don't want to vote for the other two, you're not obliged to make a nomination. So
there is, I guess, also the chance that somebody else is going to run, but I think that is unlikely. Some people were saying that Suella Braverman was going to throw her hat in the ring as like a right wing puppet, like a less fun Punch and Judy.
I think calling her a puppet is a bit harsh. I think she sincerely believes a lot of the things she says.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I agree. But she's just got, you know, fascists' hands up her ass.
Wow. Are we allowed to say that? I mean, are you allowed to say that? I don't know. I would like to distance myself from Jazza's comments just there, if anyone, you know. If anyone's planning on cancelling Jazza.
No, I'm happy to stand by that. Rishi Sunak, that's fun. Any other business?
I don't think so. We've pretty much said that, you know, Rishi Sunak, I mean, he seems the best candidate at this point. He will probably improve the Tories' polling performance, I think, because it's just so dreadful now.
He is very popular with, well, he is more popular than the others with the public. They still think of him as like the eat out to help out and COVID chancellor, don't they?
I think he's just seen as more moderate and less of the nasty party image that people like Suella Braverman convey. I think he's seen as relatively sensible, and, you know, because he's got a background in finance, the feeling is that the markets will, you know, be convinced by him or more likely to be convinced by him.
Mm-hmm.
I still think he'll lose the next general election, and I also think they'll probably put off holding one for as long as conceivably possible, which means there'll be one in late 2024 or early 2025.
I don't think they can have one in early 2025. It needs to be before December 2024.
I think you need to arrange one before December 2024, but because it's like a six-week period or something, I think it can trail into 2025. But, you know, either way, it's got to be around that time, basically. And, before we finish, there's been so many people saying, like, general election now. I think Gary Neville said it. Keir Starmer has said it. You know, people
every opposition party have all said it.
And it's not going to happen because it's not in the Tories' interest to have one.
The mechanism doesn't exist, does it? For them, yeah. And they're not going to call an election when they're literally at the lowest polling that the party has ever had.
I mean, David Gawk, who was one of the Tory rebels who voted against Boris Johnson's Brexit plan back in 2019, and then stopped being an MP after that, he suggested that that Labour could offer a deal, and potentially the Lib Dems as well, could offer a deal to any Tory MPs who just wanted, you know, who just want to stop being MPs in this mm-hmm. terrible government or associated with this terrible government. They could offer them a deal where they would say, "We, if you vote for a general election now, we'll vote against the government in a confidence motion."
Then what? We won't put you in the gallows? Like, what?
No. They said, we would let, if you do that and then stand as an independent MP in the subsequent election, we won't run candidates against you. That was David Gawk's proposal.
Well, that's silly.
It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. I mean, it's the only way that an early general election is going to happen is if enough Tory MPs, I think you still need 40 or something to do it, are willing to vote against their government in a confidence motion. And, I mean, there's a lot of Tory MPs who are apparently miserable at the moment. There was a great interview with Charles Walker, who, you know, in a very stoical way was expressing how livid he was about the situation. But I think most of them, enough of them probably want to keep doing their jobs for the time being, that it's, you know, they're not going to vote themselves out of a job, which is effectively what voting for a general election would be for most of them at this point.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Roll on the premiership of Rishi Sunak, I think, is the... unless Boris Johnson can get those votes, in which case, bring, you know...
Bring on Boris,
Boris Johnson.
Excellent. Well, I guess we'll have a chat when we have a new Prime Minister.
That'll be fun. I think we'll do that. Great. All right.
All right. Toodaloo, everybody.
Bye-bye.